chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm delighted to have Dale Kroenkamp on the show today. Dale is the author of the book, How Long, O Lord, How Long, and helps people navigate transitions through his company, Thriving Through Transitions. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Dale, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. And we are recording this at the beginning of 2023. Obviously, it won't air for a couple of months here, but I just so appreciate you making the time to be on the show. And I can't wait for our conversation today because I know it's going to help our listeners.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it.
We're going to have a good time. Well, I always like to go back and let our listeners know, how did I get connected to my guest? And so you and I have a mutual friend, Sally Matheson, that connected us probably a couple of years ago. And then you and I met, we had coffee, we had breakfast, I believe maybe at Mimi's, which is one of my favorite places to go. Little plug for Mimi's there. But, you know, you were brought to mind again, Dale. I appreciate the work so much that you're doing. And I know that today that you are the president of Thriving Through Transitions, and your whole goal is to help people, to help organizations thrive through those transitions. And I had a recent transition, because my dad passed away in August unexpectedly, and I was a daddy's girl through and through, and I miss him every single day. But here comes Christmas, and I get this sweet handwritten note from you with a beautiful poem called My First Christmas in Heaven. And I was so struck by that, Dale, because I'm thinking, number one, for you to even remember that I lost my dad, for you to remember that, hey, I have this poem I think could help Lisa, it just showed me a lot about you and who you are, and that you are a man who lives your life with great intentionality. And I just appreciate that so much. I said, Dale, we have got to get you onto the podcast. So Jenny made that happen, coordinated our schedules so that we could make it happen. But
thank you, Jenny.
But before... Yeah, I know. Go Jenny. Everybody needs a Jenny. That's for sure. But I would just say to our listeners, don't take my Jenny. Just hands off. She's my right-hand woman. But before we get into all of that and what you're doing today, I want you to talk a little bit about how you grew up. Did you grow up here in St. Louis, Dale? And tell me about siblings and your parents and all of that.
Happy to. So born and raised here in the St. Louis area. Kirkwood, Missouri was actually home for me. So the answer to the St. Louis question would be Kirkwood High School. I'm the second of three sons. Boys continue to reign in the family as I had three sons. And out of the grandchildren, five are boys and only one is a girl. So a lot of boys in the family. So Kirkwood High School, college was at the University of Central Missouri for undergrad. And then Washington University here locally for graduate school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got your master's in HR, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. I have to ask you, though, how is this with having one granddaughter amidst all these boys? Can she hold her own?
She holds her own very well. And, of course, she has me wrapped around a finger. That happens.
No surprise.
And it's a lot of fun. We would have welcomed a girl into the family. God didn't bless us with a girl, but some amazing young sons. And now it's turned out we've got wonderful grandchildren. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm just picturing this little princess. Either little yes. princess or little tomboy. I don't know, but maybe a little of both, maybe. But she's going to grow up with a lot of protectors. I know that.
Yes, she will. Yes, she will.
So you talked about getting your master's in HR from WashU. And I know that you spent the majority of your career, Dale, in executive HR positions. You were the CHRO. You rose through the ranks at several different organizations. And then that's what you did as a career. But is there anything you want to add about that? Because then I want to transition into another question. And I want you then to tell our listeners the story that led you to do what you're doing today. And that is as the president of Thriving Through Transitions, as well as an author of a book that we're going to talk about a lot.
I think the only thing that I would say about my career is just blessed that I found what I wanted to do out of college. And I know that's pretty rare these days. So my undergraduate degree was human resources. My graduate degree was, and I've been in the profession for over 40 years. I just loved it. It was a good fit for myself, for my gifts, for what gives me joy. And it's been a fun ride. There were a couple of hiccups along the way, which is what kind of led me to where I am today. And we'll talk about those.
So let me ask you a question, because you said, you know, I knew what I wanted to do. And you're right. That is so rare. How many times do you hear people maybe having an English degree and they're doing something completely different? Dale, for any younger listeners that are out there, were there things that transpired in your life, maybe mentors in high school, maybe I don't know what your parents did for a living, but were there things that informed how you wanted to be and what you wanted to go into, do you think, early on? How do you think you had such clarity at such a young age?
Well, a couple of things happened in life. So my dad was a painter, not when I say painter, not artistic painter. He painted houses, buildings, rooms, whatever. And so he was outside. There were a lot of times in his life when he was unemployed for periods of time, because that's what happened in the 1960s. And so mom and dad always said, make sure you go to college and get a job that doesn't require you to be working outside. So I always knew that from childhood that I wanted to do something in business, but I wasn't mm-hmm. certain what. Happened to be blessed with the church secretary's husband was in human resources for General Motors. And as I was talking to her one day, telling her that I just wasn't certain what a fit would be for me, she said, I'd like you to spend a day with my husband. And I said, well, what does he do? And she told me a little bit, and I spent a day with him. And I came out of that day saying, okay, that's it. I found where I wanted to go. Because while I'm an extrovert by nature, so could I sell something? Yes. Do I like to sell? Not particularly. Am I analytical? Yes. But do I want to be an accountant? No. I was trying to find out where's the mix where I can use what I do well. And that day with him, that he took the time to take this young man who was in high school and spend some time with me for a day and show me what he did, that just meant the world to me. And it just set me off on a path. And probably that's one of the reasons in my career, I probably started the careers of about 15 young people straight out of school, because somebody gave me a chance and I wanted to help other young people along the way.
That's so good. There's so much good packed in there, Dale, because I'm thinking, first of all, the secretary must have seen something in you that said, Dale might be good at this. You know, she probably saw that you were a people person, that you loved people, that you were extroverted, those sort of things. So, I mean, that's the first thing, is her taking the time to recognize those things in you and even thinking that her husband would be a good person for you to talk to. Secondly, like you said, him taking the time, wow, set your life on a trajectory that may not have happened had you not met him and spent that time with him. So there's so much good packed in there. And you've obviously gone and paid that forward multitude of times. So that's wonderful. Well, tell me about this transition. So you had a couple of things happen, and yeah. Tell our listeners those stories.
Well, actually, it really is coming up next month on the 20th anniversary. So 20 years ago, I was the head of human resources for one of the, at that time, the third largest hospital in the St. Louis metropolitan area. And we were, as an organization, wrestling with the challenges that every business goes through of matching revenue and expenses, and things weren't matching up. And our new chief operating officer continued to say, I think we have too many people. We're going to need to do a downsizing. And our organization really hadn't done that historically. We'd always found a way to work around it. We'd ultimately come to the conclusion that, yeah, we were going to need to do that. And as a leadership team, we wrestled with, but came to the conclusion that we really needed to start with leaders. And so the next week, 25 leaders were going to lose their job. And I had three responsibilities at the time. One was, how do I help 25 leaders have a conversation with somebody on their staff that they really didn't want to have, telling somebody that they did nothing wrong, but they were out of work? Second responsibility was, okay, how do we support those 25 people that come walking in the door on a Monday morning thinking it's a normal Monday and having a message delivered that probably will shock all of them? Mm-hmm. And the third was, we weren't a small organization. We had over 4,000 employees. We had over 1,000 on the medical and dental staff. And then you add to that volunteers. So how do you shape a message for the organization that helps everybody understand, what does this mean for us? What's coming next? How do we deal with that? For my personal life at that same time, I had two sons in college and one in private high school. We like to refer to those as the heavy cash flow years, but it's negative cash flow at that particular point.
Yes.
In time. I was updating the chief operating officer about our plans. Here's how we're going to execute on this. Here's how we're going to make certain everybody is supported. Then he thanked me for that and he got up, but instead of leaving, he just stood behind his chair. And then he looked at me and he said, your name is on the list. So six little words ended 25 years with the organization and made me unemployed for the first time in my life. Mm. And that was not an easy time for me. And it's not that I didn't know how to search for a job, because my background was human resources. I understood about resumes, interviewing, networking, how to go about that. But I probably wasn't ready for the emotional side of that journey. That was the part that was probably the most difficult for me. So I was unemployed for probably about 8 or 9 months and then decided to go out on my own. It's one of those things people had been telling me for years, Dale, you should be a consultant. And I kept saying, no, no. And then I just kind of felt led to it. And it was the right thing for me. And for 5 years, God kept opening door after door after door. And then one day, one of my clients said, we want you to come to work. And so I went to work for that employer. And then 10 years later, went to breakfast with my boss, who said, we've made a decision to restructure and we're eliminating your job. So I've had two jobs over 35 years and both of them were eliminated. And it led me to then say, okay, how do I help people going through this? Because it wasn't easy for me. It's not easy for other people. How do we help them? And then how do we help them with both the emotional side and the spiritual side? So I wrote a book. So I talk about in my book, How Long, O Lord, How Long? Devotions for the Unemployed and Those Who Love Them, about all the different emotions that we deal with, but we don't like to talk about. You know, when you talk about emotions, for a lot of us, it's like standing there in our underwear. We just don't feel real comfortable talking about that. So I gave back from a book standpoint, in terms of how do we help people. So it's not a book that helps somebody find a job. It's the book that helps them navigate what they weren't expecting. In fact, one of the things I hear the most, Lisa, from people who've read the book is, you put into words what I've experienced, but I couldn't articulate. I thought I was abnormal going through these things, and now I realize that's just part of the process. And so that's been the most rewarding, is when I know that we've been able to help somebody who's dealing with it. The sub-audience for the book, but equally important, is those people that are important in somebody's life, and I think a lot about spouses, who don't necessarily understand everything that their spouse is going through with this job loss. And at the same time, they are impacted also by those same emotions. So if the spouse is, who's unemployed, is anxious about where are we going to pay the bills, how are we going to do that, trust me, the other spouse is dealing with that also. And so I wanted to have something that the reader who wasn't going through it could read it and get a better understanding of what the person they care for and love so very much is going through. And hopefully through that, allow them to work together to navigate the journey.
Yeah. Well, we're going to dig into it. I love the book. It is what I would consider more like a field guide, really, Dale. I mean, you've got appendices in the back, and we'll talk about that with sample correspondence. I mean, I love the way that you've organized it too. But, you know, the loss of a job is included in the top 10 most stressful stressors in life. In fact, I read one stat that said it's number 5. If you want to know what 1, 2, 3, 4 are, this is according to the Signs of Health. Number 1 is the death of a loved one. A spouse or a loved one. Number 2 would be a divorce. Number 3 would be a move, a large move of some sort. D would be a major illness or health concern. And then number 5 is a job loss. So it is in the top 10. And there is a lot, you know, of anxiety. And you talk about this, but, you know, we know that at first maybe there's a lot more emotional and obviously financial stress and emotional stress, but we know too that stress untamed, right, Dale, can cause a lot of physical illness as well. And it can manifest itself in sleep disorders, all kinds of things. So I love that, you know, that you have written this book. You know, one of the things that you talk about in there is allowing yourself to grieve. It is a loss of control, loss of professional identity, self-esteem, purposeful activity every day, daily routine. These are just some of the things and the stressors that, you know, you deal with when you lose a job. And you and I kind of talked offline, but, you know, many times, and you said it happens a lot more than people even realize, but it's not in your control. Sometimes it's in our control. Maybe there's a performance issue and you're not living up to what you agreed to do with that employer. But like in your case, it was organizational restructure where that job is just eliminated. So boy, having things like that happen that are completely out of your control, it's difficult.
Well, and so since you mentioned those other even higher stressors, let me just talk for just a minute about the numbers to give you an idea how big job loss is in this country. So death, there's about 2.6 million deaths in this country every year. There's probably about close to 900,000 divorces in a year. Cancer, let's think of cancer because it's one of the biggest. There's about 1.7 million people in this country that are diagnosed with cancer in a year. But the 10-year average, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, of job losses, so job losses in this country, 10 years prior to the pandemic, so let's take the pandemic out of it, 21.7 million every year. So 21.7 million every year. And those are jobs that, yes, they come and go for a variety of reasons. One business closes, another business opens, two businesses merge, one acquires another. There's a lot of reasons for that, but think about 21.7 million. That's every man, woman, and child where you and I live in the state of Missouri, plus Illinois, plus Kansas. And that's going on every year. So the numbers are indeed staggering. But see, nobody talks about it. That's the challenge, is there's this feeling of shame and embarrassment when someone is unemployed that I don't want to talk about this. I remember when I was in high school, I got cut from the baseball team. I wasn't looking to put something out to the world and say, hey, I got cut. We keep those things to ourselves, and people do that with job loss. And unfortunately, when they do that, they limit the people that can help them because people don't know. That's one right. of the biggest struggles with it all. And then they find out later how many people that they already know that have been through job loss. So their very support system could be there to help them if they'll just let people know.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Well, I can't wait to dig in more here, Dale, but we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Dale Kronkamp on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Dale Kronkamp. So, Dale, we've just got so much good stuff that we've already talked about. We've got more to come, but I want to dig in specifically into your book. So, you know, the way that you've organized the book, I love the way you organized it, by the way. You didn't ask for my opinion, but good job on how you wrote and organized the book. But you've written the book organized consistent with the change curve, the Kubler-Ross change curve. Can you explain that to our listeners that may not know what this is? And you've got an appendix in the back that kind of shows the different changes and stages of change.
Yeah, Dr. Kubler-Ross wrote about death and dying is where the change curve actually came. And it's how do people respond when they get the news that they have a terminal illness? And when that happens, they initially deny it, they fight it, they're angry. And somewhere along the line, they finally get to acceptance of it. And once they get to acceptance, they begin to live again in a different way. And they begin to come out of that far more positively and preparing themselves for death. Well, that change curve has been adopted into the business world just to talk about how we go through change, especially changes that are emotional changes. And so that's what I used in writing the book. And we did our best to organize it as if someone had just lost their job. How do they go through that? How do they deal with the anger, the denial, the, gee, there must be something wrong. They're going to want to hire me back. I know it was a mistake, to finally saying, okay, this happened and there's nothing I can do about it. Now, what do I do to go forward? How do I move forward and make a better life? And that's when we begin to come out of it.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, and I was thinking about it, Dale, it's probably not always linear through that curve, is it? I mean, sometimes, you know, you might find yourself at the anger stage and all of a sudden you go back a few steps to the fear stage. Yeah, it's not a linear process, probably.
It bounces around, and sometimes it even bounces from day to day where we think that we're in a better place. And then we might get some unexpected news that just takes us back down and deals with it. And it's hard for people just to go through it. And what I tell people all the time is, look, I know it's hard, but what I'm going to tell you is what comes out of it is something you'll look back and you'll be in awe at all that's happened to you, that's happened so good to you, but you have to go through some pain to get to that.
Yeah. I mean, you deal with a lot of the questions that people probably have, like, I can't believe that this has happened to me. Why me? Why me and not someone else? And you already alluded to this, but telling your family, you know, and telling people. And I love the story. I think innately, Dale, I think people want to help. They want to help if they know what you need. I really do believe that. Most people I do believe want to help. They're good human beings. And you tell the story of the baseball manager who was fired?
Yes.
Yep. And what did he do?
The first time he didn't do anything, which was similar to what happened to me, Lisa. The first time I was pretty quiet about it. And as the months went by, I would bump into people and they'd say, "Hey, Dale, I heard you were looking for a job. I wish I had known because I heard about something at our company or somewhere else," but it was always past tense. The next time I actually did what the manager did, which was to throw a party and let the world know. And that's what I did. And I actually communicated to my whole network that, hey, my job got eliminated. And out of that came such an outpouring of people who said, "How can I help? What can I do? Who can I introduce you to? I'll keep my eyes and ears open." And the very thing that I needed the most was that support. And it was there when I was able to tell the world that I got, like in high school, I got cut from the baseball team, folks. And so I need some help.
Right. So first thing, throw a party. Throw a party and invite everyone you know. But let me ask you this, because you said, you know, it can be one of those things because, and you've already said this, you know, you're having all these different emotions. Well, your spouse, your kids, your family is having the same emotions. Tell our listeners what Drew said. Drew said something to your wife and said, "Tell Dad this." And he was a freshman, I think, at the time.
Yeah, he was a freshman. And so he had enough sense to know that sometimes when somebody loses a job, the family ends up relocating it. And so he said to my wife, "Look, New York is fine. Florida is fine. California is fine. Texas is fine. But please don't take me to Iowa." And and it's not that there's anything bad with Iowa. We have many friends from Iowa. But I think he was saying, if we're going to move, I'd rather go somewhere that's fun for me. Which was right. Typical, but that was also his way of just saying, "It's okay, Dad. We're going to be just fine." And gosh, when I heard that,
good son. That had to have given you some comfort there. Yeah, we're going to be okay, and the kids are going to be okay. In fact, he probably would have welcomed the adventure a little bit, maybe even Dale at the time. But some of the things, you know, and I want to kind of hop into this, but one of the things that you say is, what do you do with your time? Okay, now you don't have a job to get up to go to. How do you, and you said, look at it as a gift of time. And you even say you could pick up a new hobby. I mean, but I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking the stress to me would be, how do I balance just enjoying my time with my family, maybe doing some things that I haven't had the time to do, with knowing that every day my job is to find a new job?
Yeah, it is not easy, but it's important. And it's important to do mentally and physically. So this is one of those times that God is really saying, rest a little bit. But we don't always like to rest, but we need to. Everybody will tell you, you have to work as many hours as you used to work in your job, finding a job. And the reality is you only control what you control. You don't control the results, you control your efforts. And there's just not as many things to do as you can. And so it's really important to get a chance to get some perspective and get away. And one of the other things that's really good to do is do something for somebody else. It's really easy to do a pity party, to feel bad for yourself that you've lost a job. Go spend some time helping out somebody else who's in a worse situation, and you'll feel a lot better. But we do need to take a break. And that's where I think the conflict comes in for most people. So my mistress in life is golf. I love it. And there were times when I'd be on a golf course because there was nothing happening. And then I'd stand there and all of a sudden say to myself, gosh, is this the day some job pops open and I'm not there to pounce on it right away? And then I would also have days when the weather was great and I was working away on trying to find a job going, I should be out enjoying that. So it is conflicted time. That's hard. But I think if you can give yourself permission and say, I'm going to take a couple days off, it's okay. And when we remember who's in control of everything, it's a little bit easier to let go.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of your chapters, Dale, is called Faith is a Muscle, you know, and I was just thinking, it reminded me of the verse in James 2:17 says, faith without works is dead. Faith without action is dead. So, you know, I mean, you've got to have the faith, but then you've also got to have the works and the action. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. Hi, honey. Sorry, buddy. I just want to get some more coffee.
Hello.
Thank you, Allie.
Hi. I just made my mom coffee.
She made me coffee. I wish I could virtually give it to you, Dale, through the screen here.
You're adorable.
That's Allie. Thank you, babe. Okay. Thank you, sweetie. Yeah, that's funny. She never comes in ever. But hey, that's a blooper, Jenny, that we'll maybe we'll leave it in here. I don't know. She never comes into my room, but today she did. But you know, faith without words. So you know, there is action. We have to have faith in like you said, the one who's in control of everything. But we do need to take action. You can't just sit back and hope for the best. Greg, my husband, always says, hope is not a strategy.
Very wise man. That is very true. So, and God will order the steps. So if you're looking in the wrong place or making the steps wrong, believe me, something's going to happen that's going to redirect those steps and move it forward.
Yeah, so good. Well, I had already said this, but I do want to, let me ask you this question before I ask this next one. Dale, what are some of the pitfalls that people can avoid? And I'm thinking of a couple specifically, what sometimes people had the tendency possibly to, you know, speak poorly maybe of the place where they were eliminated from. I mean, I've seen that. So that definitely would be one. But what else would you say? What are some of the pitfalls that people should avoid during this time?
Well, I think if you're dealing with anger, you have to get rid of it somehow. And that's one that people think they're hiding it, but it isn't. I mean, I've actually sat with people and said, look, I can't pass your name on until you deal with the anger that's still there. So you're going to have to deal with it, whether it's you shout it out. I'm a big believer for people in journals to write, and not write like as if somebody's going to read it, but write what's really on your heart or talk to a counselor. But there's got to be a way to deal with anger. So not dealing with anger is one of those. I think there's a couple places that people often get stuck, Lisa. And one of those is they're looking to do the exact same thing, but in a different company in the same industry. And sometimes those are really hard to find, but that's what they know and their expertise. And instead of saying, okay, what are my gifts and skills? How might I use those? Is there a different industry? Gee, I've been in a small company. What about a big company? I've been in a big company. Might I use those gifts well in a smaller company or in a nonprofit? So we sometimes limit ourselves. And in some ways, we're protecting our identity. I've got this skill set. I've got these abilities. And I really don't want to start all over. And I encourage people to say, this is a time to stop and take a look much broader than you've looked before and to accept that there is no such thing as something like a perfect resume. I've also seen people just get in a dither in a circle where anytime somebody says something, they rewrite their resume. And they've rewritten the resume so many times, all they're doing is rewriting a resume. The resume's job is just to get somebody to talk to you. That's all it is. So it's not going to be perfect. You're going to tweak it as time goes by. So make certain that you certainly go about doing that. And then I think one of the others is a reticence to get out and meet people. So the word networking is scary for a lot of people, especially if they're introverts. I'm an extrovert, so cups of coffee with people is fun. My wife would die if she had to do that. But what I tell people is, look, it's just relationship building and those people want to help. And if you just go into it, I'm going to meet a new friend, it becomes much easier to go about doing. But you'll never know who's going to help you with something. I have a friend of mine who had lost his job and had a long journey looking. And somebody said, hey, my next door neighbor is a scientist. Can you help him with their resume? And he said, sure. And he did. And the guy said, I don't know how to thank you, but I know somebody who's in human resources. Would you like to meet him? And he said, sure. Well, that was the entry to the company for a job that was never even posted, just from helping out somebody with a resume. So you just never know. People are so good, but we often don't let them. We have to let people in.
Yeah. Oh, this totally resonates with me. I so believe the way that you believe with that, Dale. I do. And relationships, you know,
talking about this, Lisa, I don't want to forget, we talked a little bit about my kids and spouses, but spouses are really forgotten in this process. I think my wife would probably tell you she can think about less than five people that asked her how she was doing while I was unemployed. So the default is to go up and see the spouse and say, how's the spouse who's unemployed doing, which is great. But also, again, recognize they're going through something. So if you have a friend that you know who's unemployed, make sure you spend a little time with their spouse, seeing how they're doing, because sometimes they feel caught, like they can't talk about it because they've got to be holding everything together because things are so difficult right now for their spouse who's unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's such solid sage advice, Dale. I'm going to make sure I incorporate that for myself, you know, going forward, because yeah, that's, how are you doing? Well, gosh, we don't have time to continue talking about everything that I want to talk about, but I do want people, and I don't get any kind of kickbacks from Dale. I promise you I don't. But if you're going through something like this, or you have a friend, or even to, I always love going through things, even if I don't have a friend right now, or I'm not going through it, Dale, because I want to be prepared when the time comes, you know, to be more equipped, right? To either help myself or help other people. Go get the book. In the back of the book, Dale has got other recommended reading material, which is awesome. In his book, he has other books that he would like to recommend that you read. The first one, I kind of chuckled, Dale, the first one that you recommended was Halftime by the late Bob Buford. And I just recently had Lloyd Reeb on the Something Extra podcast. And as you know, Lloyd co-founded the Halftime Institute with Bob. And so that would be another great episode for our listeners to listen to. I mean, just so rich. But you also have sample correspondence that the readers can take and put their own voice in, which I think is wonderful. And here's the thing. I was thinking about it this morning, Dale. You would not be doing any of the things that you're doing today. You wouldn't have written the book if you had not gone through this yourself.
No, absolutely not. I would have just continued my corporate life, which I was enjoying, and it would have been very good. And I would have certainly helped a lot of people in the work that I did there, but I wouldn't have touched some of the other people who I've had an opportunity to touch and given a gift for people that are going through it. And one of the other things about the book that I find interesting is, candidly, Lisa, I sell very few books to people who are unemployed. The most common sale is to somebody who knows someone who's unemployed. So they watch them struggle and they want to do something for them and they give it to them as a gift. And then the person receives it very well. So that's another thing, is to think about, can I get a few copies so that when I find somebody who's unemployed, I can get it to them. It's a great way. I want to have a cup of coffee with you and I have a gift for you. Great way to provide some help that they don't even know that they need.
Yeah, my word for 2021 was love more. And love is an action. It's a great way to show some action and some love in action, I think, is to do that. I'm going to put a plug in for you here, Dale, too. Okay, you didn't ask me to do this, but I'm going to do it. Thriving Through Transitions. I mean, one of the things that Dale really is passionate about, too, is to help organizations that are going through a transition, that are possibly had a merger and they know that there's going to be some jobs eliminated. Reach out to Dale. You know, he's got a lot of counsel and a lot of sage advice as to how to do that and do it well and love people well through the process. So there you go, Dale. And you don't even have to pay me for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And that really is where my passion is, what I've recognized, because I've been through those transitions corporately, the merger, the acquisition, the divestiture, the CEO transitions, the realignments, the reorgs. And where we fail in corporate America is to understand these are emotional times for the people that go through them. And if we don't pay enough attention to that, then later on, months later, is when somebody's saying, why did this not work so well? Why did we lose some key people? Why did it cost us so much? And it's all because we didn't pay enough attention to the people side. And that's where my heart's been for my entire career, but especially now. It's How can we do it better?
Right. That's so good. Well, Dale, this is something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah. So I'm going to go to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 29:18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. But I want to flip that, because what we don't often think about is, which is where my heart has always been, is without people, the vision perishes. You see, we as leaders, we don't do anything on our own. We get work done through other people. And we just so often think what we're doing is more important, and the focus really needs to be on those who are doing the work. And how do we pour into them? How do we feed them? How do we grow them? How do we recognize and celebrate the differences? When I talk to people about leadership, I remind them that the staff, the people they work with, are kind of like a garden. It's not all one plant. You'll have hydrangeas in there that need a lot of something. Hydrangeas need a lot of water, so you have to pour a lot into them. You've probably got some succulents that work for you that are really low maintenance. They just stay out of my way. And you've probably got some rose bushes that are a little bit high maintenance, but boy, do they produce some amazing things. And if you treat them all the same, you're going to miss the beauty of each of those. And that's why I say, without people, anything we try and do is going to fail. And so focus on the people. And if you focus on the people, you're going to be far more successful than you can even imagine.
That's how you accomplish the vision.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. Dale, I hope you write something about that. I hope there's a blog out there that you've written. And when you write it, or if you have already, please share it with me and I'll share it. But okay. If you haven't written it, get busy. Because that's beautiful.
I will make certain we do that.
Yes. Well, Dale, this has been so much fun for me. Thank you so much for your time this morning. And I cannot wait for our listeners to hear from you. And I know that you're going to help them. I know that what you have to say is going to help them. I know your book. I hope people go out and buy multiple copies of your book so that they can have some love in action for people that are going through things.
Wonderful. Lisa, thanks for having me on. It was just a joy to talk about what's on my heart. And I appreciate that opportunity and appreciate you and the work that you do.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.